Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hey everyone, hope you're doing well. Welcome back to a brand new edition of the Ariel Helwani Basketball Show. I'm very excited about today's episode because it's about a topic that I am extremely interested in. Obviously, I love all things basketball. I love the action on the court, but I'm also very interested in the business of basketball. And to go a little further, I'm very, very interested in the media side of things. Naturally. So we have called upon one of the very best in the business, a man who covers this side of media, meaning, you know, the media business, that beat, the broadcasters, the media rights deals, the networks, all that stuff and more, to talk to us about a really interesting and important time in the history of the NBA. Why? Because there are only 2 years left on their current media rights deals. That's essentially with Turner Broadcasting, TNT, and Disney, ESPN, ABC. Those contracts expire at the end of the 2024-2025 season. So there's two seasons left, and then things are about to get really interesting. Their current deals in total equal out to about $2.4 billion, and people are talking about some big numbers coming up for them, and also some new players, Amazon, Apple, potentially NBC getting back into the mix. Remember our great conversation with Bob Costas. So we have called upon Andrew Marchand of the New York Post, who also hosts a great podcast called the Marchand and Oran podcast with John Oran, who does a great job of covering media and sports media for the Sports Business Journal. They do a tremendous job week in and week out, and they've been talking about this for the last few weeks. So I wanted to have Andrew on to talk about the state of the NBA media deals, what he thinks is going to happen, where they may go, some thoughts on ESPN versus TNT, some thoughts on the current broadcast teams, future broadcast teams, all-time great broadcast teams, a bit about his career, how he got into this, why this particular beat. It's a great conversation. I'm a huge fan when it comes to this stuff. I love to consume all the sports media stuff. And so I hope that you find interest in it as well, because let's not forget, when the last deal started, the salary cap went way up. And one of the teams that benefited tremendously from this was Golden State Warriors. They were able to sign Kevin Durant as a result, and you all know what happened. So it's not just about the media rights deals, you know, and where you can watch the games. This affects the product on the court and the current, you know, makeup of the NBA and the teams involved. So very interesting stuff, a great trickle-down effect, and no one better than Andrew Marchand to talk about it all with us. Without further ado, here's my conversation with the New York Post's Andrew Marchand. Enjoy. Oh, what a great honor this is. I've actually wanted to talk to this man on air for quite some time. We've talked off air. He's the best in the business when it comes to the sports media business. He covers that beat better than anyone, if you ask me. He's the gold standard. He's the agenda setter. He's the man who works for the New York Post, also does the great Marchand and Oran podcast. He's the one and only Andrew Marchand, who's here to talk to us about all things NBA TV rights. So kind of him to take some time out of his day. Andrew, how are you? Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for the nice introduction. Very nice. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yes, I like to try to stroke your ego so that you can write nice things about me.
Yeah, that's a good move.
So
won't work.
Hopefully succeeded in that regard. But no, I really do appreciate it. And this is a really interesting topic and an interesting time for the NBA, especially coming off conclusion of the 2022-2023 season. The next 2 years are going to be very important. But actually, before we get into all of that, because I hear you on all the podcasts talking all about the nuts and bolts of the sports media business, but if I may, just off the top, could I ask when you came up with the idea to cover this for a living, to make the sports media business your beat? Because I know you've covered the Yankees, baseball, etc., but most people want to get into this, you know, to be on air and to be the guy that is announcing. You want to write and talk about the announcers, so to speak. How did that dream come about?
Yeah, first off, I like to note that if you were to take any job off the earth and it still would spin at the exact same speed, it would be my job covering sports media. So I just want to reference that. So when I went to the Post as an Agate clerk, so this is my second run with the Post, Phil Mushnick is the longtime sports media columnist. I was able to just, you know, kind of was aggressive in sort of wanting to do more stuff and had a lot of ideas. And sports media was something that just sort of, I don't know exactly how that happened, but I gravitated towards it. And I ended up writing at a young age, you know, I was 23, 24, a column called The Sports Clicker. So I was still like an entry level position, and I got to write this Sunday column, which I'm sure everyone appreciated, where I would like criticize and praise, a lot of praise, but criticize, you know, sportscasters, been doing it for a long time. And I also would make a lot of calls. And then I went and covered the Mets. So I did that for a few years. That led to covering the Mets for a couple of years when they went to the World Series in 2000. And then after that, I went back to basically covering sports media again. Then I went to ESPN. I was there for 11 years. When I left the Post that first time, I was covering sports media. I didn't really want to leave. The financial situation was a little bit different. And I was a young guy. So, and I knew that ESPN was a great opportunity. So I wasn't like but I really loved what I was doing. And it worked out though. I went there for 11 years. And then every time my contract was up, pretty much, I looked into trying to get back to covering sports media, which you're right, is odd. Most people, I was on, you know, some of the shows, and most people want to be on the shows. I kind of want to write about the shows. And also lifestyle wise, it's better, but that's just my passion. I don't know. It's a weird passion to have, but as you know, from your career, you know, success you've had and the focus you've had on certain things, I think when you're, especially now in the digital age, if you're passionate about what you're writing about or talking about or reporting on, it just comes through, because the people who are interested, they're passionate, right? They're not getting paid to read. They're doing this on their free time. And so it's where my most passion was. And I really felt like when I looked at my career and where I was at ESPN, where, you know, I was fortunate I could have stayed at ESPN, but I chose to leave. I said, you know, please don't make me a contract offer, because I just felt like it's like kind of the way digital works. There's niche. And I thought this niche is, because I think what's misunderstood a little bit is you're not only just covering, like, it's not like a lot of people would always say, oh, it's navel gazing. Only people in the media are interested. Actually, no. I mean, you're writing about Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. You're writing about billion-dollar deals with the NFL. And it really, especially during COVID, it's how sports are run is through media. And so in terms of money involved in it. So all those things, and being my passion, better lifestyle, even though I do work a lot, those are all the reasons and how it's come to be.
By the way, just curious, as someone who writes a lot about contract negotiations and whatnot, you told ESPN not to offer you a deal because you wanted to go. Isn't that like 101? Just take the offer and use that as leverage.
Yeah, well, no. Well, I knew what... Like, I knew the situation of where I could probably get to with the Post. Like, we went back and forth. The first offer, I was like, oh, can I do this? Because it was a little bit less than what I was making. And then I got it to where it was more similar. But, I didn't want to be tempted. I mean, I don't think, like, look, they liked me. They wanted me to stay. I don't think they were going to give me, like, an Ariel Helwani contract. So, they might have offered. Again, I just didn't. I knew what I wanted to do. Like, I knew. Like, I thought about just doing it myself, you know, Substack. Like, that would have been a little risky, you know, and I have a family and stuff to say goodbye and say, hey, kids, we're not only not going to Disney World anymore for free, but we may not eat. Even though I was very confident, until you turn on those lights, you don't know. I think in hindsight, it would have worked. And I thought then, too, it just, again, I think I had some balls doing the move, making the move, but to do it without really anybody paying you would have been a little bit tough. So to answer, so I just ultimately, that's how it came to, you know, what happened.
By the way, do you have an agent?
I do not.
Do any of the TV media, you know, like rights?
When I was at ESPN, I had someone who like kind of handled some of the negotiations, but it was a little bit different relationship than some other people might have with an agent. Just, I don't want to get to the details, but it was more of like they helped out, you know, in some regard with some guidance. But I don't, I just, it's too much of a conflict for me to have somebody, you know, I cover these things and they are going to represent other people. So like if you and I had the same agent, that really, to me, even if I, you know, even if I'm above board, it's still the perception would be bad.
And did you ever pitch ESPN on covering this beat, or is that too weird because they're such, you know, like they're the behemoth, right?
Yeah, I thought about it. And I always felt like no matter what they said, it wouldn't work. Like if you kind of, it just wouldn't work. Like in my opinion, it just doesn't work. I know other people, you know, Brian Seltzer was at CNN. And I think it could work. My style though, I just don't think it would work. I just can't like help myself. Like, I don't know. I just can't like, I don't know. I just try to be like really fair. Number one, fair, but I'm trying to be as honest as possible. So if I didn't think something was good, and then those are kind of technically your bosses, I just don't know how that would actually train. I just don't think it would end well.
Excluding yourself, who's the best to ever do this?
Good question. Now he's very controversial, but I mean, Mushnick for me is, you know, he said things that others wouldn't say in certain things. Some, you know, some things, there's a lot of stuff sometimes I don't agree with, but a lot of stuff I do. So I'd say probably Phil, you know, Rudy Martsky, a lot of people talk about in terms of breaking news as well. You know, there's a lot of really good people who've done it, but I think those are the two probably that, you know, people would consider the best. And they do it differently.
Sure, sure. Of the major sports, right? NFL, NBA, or the leagues, MLB, NHL, we could throw in soccer, which is getting really interesting right now, especially here in this country, NASCAR, golf, etc. Which, and this includes everything from the rights deals to the announcers to the whole thing, like which sport do you think is the most fun to cover from your perspective, from like a media biz perspective? Which has the most drama, the most characters, you know, the, obviously NFL is king in America, but I don't know if that's the answer to this question. Is there one that comes to mind?
Well, I would say, yeah, I almost consider myself a football writer in some regards, because football is king. And it just is the biggest driver. Look, I like all the, like, so I can't really say that one's the most fun. I like the most interesting story. Like last year, when Joe Buck left Fox and Aikman left Fox and went to ESPN, and then the Brady deal. And I also had Sean McVay was going to be offered $20 million from Amazon. I mean, that one's amazing. That was an amazing story. That was fun. That made me feel like I was back covering baseball, because I knew, like, I kind of had good inkling of what was going on the whole time. But I also knew that was one where you didn't know if like a Schefter might jump in, which he did at some point, and some other people, because this was dealing with these biggest names, and he just didn't know where it could come from, which is like kind of when you cover stuff, you know, I'm sure you find this as well. It's like, it's not just like, oh, well that, you know, these are your competitors. Like back in the day, it's like Post versus Daily News. It's like you're versus everybody. And so, and you know, obviously the internet makes it so like people can just throw stuff out there as well. And I mean, that's always kind of weird, because if there's no ramifications, like, I don't know, is that credible to begin with? It's all fun to me. I don't think there's one that's necessarily the most fun, but I'd say the most important is football.
Well, I would say the NBA is about to get really fun, right? Like with the next 2 years, it's a fascinating time. So let us get into that. So the season just wrapped up. From a ratings perspective, how was the season for the NBA?
Yeah, excellent. Their playoffs were their best in, I think, maybe 5 years. A lot of people pointed to the finals and said they could have had Lakers Celtics. They had Nuggets Heat and just went 5 games, but the numbers were good. I mean, you know, solid. They weren't like all time numbers, but you know, get 11, 12 million people watching each game. That's a good number. And I think if I'm the NBA, I can go into negotiations like, look, we can do this with LeBron. We can do this with Lakers and Celtics. And then we get Heat and Nuggets. We're still gonna give you 11 million people. I think, you know, it's a challenging time because of what's going on in cable TV in terms of cord cutting, and, you know, the tonnage that baseball, hockey, and the NBA was an advantage for them. It's still an advantage somewhat, but not as big an advantage. You know, scarcity is a little bit kind of, I think, better. Like, honestly, the NBA would probably be smarter to cut down their season, in my opinion. I'll make the games more important, each game more important. I don't think that will happen, because it just, they'd probably lose money in the short term. But I think long term, that'd be a smarter move. And so I think, yeah, they're coming, then their contracts are going to be up, not after this upcoming season, but the following season. But they'll be out of the exclusive negotiating window toward the end of this year. with ESPN and Turner. And so then all the other players will be involved.
And I want to ask you about that in a moment, but just curious, 3 years ago during the bubble, it was like the sky is falling, the NBA is dead. Some people were saying they went too woke, they were ruining it, it's done. Are they feeling any of the after effects from that, or are they all the way back in your opinion?
I would recommend never going on social media for information, because that would be...
Because it was like depressing as an NBA fan. Like every day it was like people rooting for their demise. I was like, geez, this is a little
much. Well, look, I would say this. The wokes, there is a... I don't really want to get into this. I know you're not asking me to. I don't really want to get into that conversation in terms of where that is. But I'm
not asking you if they went woke. I'm just saying.
No, I know you're not. You're not. No, I know you didn't do anything wrong. I'm saying like, I don't want to talk about something that you didn't even ask. Kind of stupid.
Sure.
No, that's a... Like, I sometimes rate things. I get a 1 out of 5 on that one because you didn't even ask me that. I'm like, I don't want to talk about that. All right. But my point was, is that, so I don't really think the woke factor to me has been the biggest factor when the ratings have gone down. I think the biggest thing, and when you look at the future of the NBA, and this is the future of everything, your podcast, sports, but specifically sports and games, is that when you're a little bit younger than me, but I still think you're old enough where when you were a kid or when I was a kid, it was before social media. And so if you wanted to watch Michael Jordan and see his great play, and he was on at 1 o'clock on NBC, you either had to be there at 1 o'clock when there's a commercial, that's when you go to the bathroom. There's no DVR. You're not going back. You had to watch every second. And if you missed it, you could maybe watch the local news, or you could watch SportsCenter or CNN Sports Tonight and get a couple of highlights. But again, you better be there at the right time at 11 o'clock when it started. Now, you don't have to do that. The second LeBron or Ja Morant has an amazing play, it's on social media 3 seconds later. Sometimes even more entertaining with like music or some other, like a wrestling call behind it or something. That's an issue, I think, when you look at the next generation going to watch these games and how they watch these games and how you monetize the sport. Because, right now we're seeing still very good audience and even audience growth, and they do have a good demographic. But like that social media aspect is harder to monetize. You can monetize it, but just in comparison to what the billions of dollars, the companies that have the NBA and may have in the future have paid. I think that to me is the biggest issue. So like when people look back of like what's gone on with numbers and all that kind of stuff, I think just the new technology, it makes it so for the average, 18-year-old, do they have to be there at 1 o'clock or 8 o'clock, when they'll just look on social media and kind of get a catch up and maybe don't care as much as we did or had just didn't have the accessibility that we had to access, the biggest plays and the thing everyone's talking about.
There are two national broadcasters, ESPN, ABC, TNT. Who had the better year in your opinion?
I'll do the, weak thing of saying I'm going to split it. I would say...
sitting on the fence.
Well, not really. I'll rip some people here for you. But I would say the Inside the NBA is the best show ever. Iconic.
Best show ever, right? You agree with that?
Best sports studio show ever. Because Barkley's the best ever. Like, Barkley's the difference. Ernie Johnson's a tremendous host. Like, the, people who study the business, there is a skill level to what he does that would make that show different. There's other people who are equally as good, but you couldn't just put anybody in there. So he's important. Barkley is Jordan and Shaq's Pippen, and he makes Shaq really good because of how Barkley is on the air and what that does for Shaq. And then Kenny Smith's a good third guy who, although he does have an ego, kind of subverts it a little bit in terms of he's not trying to compete, which is very important in when you're in a group setting for a booth or a studio. So they're the best. Now ESPN's show, it's actually better than it's been. It's not even close to Inside the NBA, right? They're doing, I don't know, I've got to come up with a name. I've played around with it, but it's Get Up, Take PTI, because that's all you have. But all those people are good on TV, from Greenberg to Stephen A. to Wilbon to Jalen. And who am I missing? Somebody? Stephen A. Will.
Greenberg, Jalen, Wilbon, Stephen A. It's the four of them.
Yeah. Yep. So they're all good on TV. And so It's better than it's been. It's not even close to it. And then on the game side, I would say that TNT's kind of missed the boat. Their best play-by-player is Ian Eagle. You know, they've gone Harlan. They had beat Brian Anderson as their top play-by-play person. I don't think they emphasize the games broadcast enough in terms of like post-Marv. You know, even though Marv wasn't the same at the end of his career as he was, you know, at his peak, they just kind of have de-emphasized that. And you saw that like in the conference finals with Harlan, Van Gundy, and Reggie Miller struggling at the end of the Celtics Heat game, and they don't work together during the year. And then on the other side, I think Breen, Van Gundy, Jeff Van Gundy, and Mark Jackson are really good. I know there's like everything, it's polarizing for NBA fans. I think that's a really good crew. I think that feels big. I think they work well together. I think Van Gundy might be the best game analyst TV game analyst in sports. So that's how I split it up for you.
Now, I was joking, but it's a very fair answer because Inside the NBA is the best and ESPN's A crew is the best by far. I totally agree about Ian Eagle. I'm shocked that they don't have him as the lead. He and Breen are my two favorite, and they got him. They have Ian Eagle, and I feel like he's continuously overlooked and underused, so I couldn't agree more. Why do you think historically ESPN just has not been able to figure out the studio situation? And even, like, I would argue, and I don't know if you agree with this, like, even if you use the NBA Today crew, where it's, you know, the specific cast, where it's Malika and Richard Jefferson and Kendrick Perkins, even that would make more sense than the guys that you see all day on ESPN. Because to your point, it just feels like an extension of those morning shows. Nevertheless, why do you think historically they have never been able to figure out the studio team? When they have the A team when it comes to the games, the studio team continues to change every couple of years.
Well, I think number one, what you just said, the last thing is they changed it every couple of years. They've also, the philosophy changes every couple of years. You had Magic as like the host once. You had Bill Simmons on it at one point. They've done a lot of different things. And I think the having Inside the NBA shadow has hurt them, you know, that comparison and trying to be that show instead of being what you should be. You know, that show, the Inside NBA, is so much fun. And ESPN, I think with Stephen A, they've tried to do that, but it's just not the same. Like, you just would never see on ESPN's two guys like sprinting to the screen, which doesn't even make any sense when I tell you. Like, if I just said that, you're like, wait, what happens on the show? If you've like never seen it, but like, yeah, that's great. Like, you just like, you watch for that. And they're not really doing, look, there are people who don't like Inside, you know, the person who's a diehard NBA fan sometimes doesn't like, who knows, like watches everything and is big into analytics. You know, they might not like Inside the NBA, right? That's not, but they go broader. So I think that's the problem, is you can't try to be something you're not. And there's only one Barkley. Like, nobody else is there, you know, like, because of who he is, like, as a player. Because you can be, you know, you could be outspoken and good, like Kendrick Perkins is. This isn't an NBA guy, but I think Marcus Spears has some Barkley in him. But he wasn't the player. I mean, Barkley's one of the 50 best players of all time. I mean, it's ridiculous how good he was. And he's like a unique player. Not only was he like a top 50, but he's like 6'4" and like was a power forward. And so when he says something and he doesn't care, like, do you know Barkley?
Personally, no.
Okay. So anybody who knows Barkley, like, this is his reputation. He's just like a great guy, right? Like, and he's interested in other people. And he's just on the air that comes through. And I think, especially now, I say this a lot, like, and this is also why you have to be genuine. Like, I just think in the digital age, even though he's not really on social media, the more genuine you are, the better you come across, which is maybe obvious, but I just think like the person who is super polished, but maybe wasn't as genuine in the past, kind of doesn't work as well now. And so I just think that ESPN, you have to let the shows, I'll try to sound like hip, but I'll just sound like an old guy, cook for a few years. Yeah. And they don't usually do that. So this iteration they have, and I think they will. So, you know, when they put it together, I was like, yeah, that will be, you know, you're going to have good TV, because a lot of times they are guessing, right? When you put Bill Simmons on the pregame show, as successful as Bill Simmons has been, you're kind of guessing, can he do this? This is different than what he's done. And it's a little bit, and this is not about him. And like, you put Magic as like, they had no hosts. I don't know. I mean, that one didn't make any, I mean, I wasn't covering it there, but that makes no sense. And so it's just a different skill level. And I always kind of think, and I think media people get this wrong, executives, it's like, why is this person good? And then, well, why are we, then we're going to try them on something else. Now, there are people who have done it. Kornheiser has been successful as a writer, talk radio and TV. There's not that many people who, if you go through it, Simmons has done it. I mean, TV, I don't know if, I'm not sure about TV yet, but still with the podcast and the writing. And then as like an entrepreneur type of guy, but there's not that many. Wilbon's another one, but anyways, it's hard to do it in different things. So they've kind of tried to, it's good to try to be creative. I mean, but they haven't been that well thought out, I don't think.
To the best of your knowledge, has ESPN ever made a play to try to take some of the TNT studio guys away, sort of like what they did with Aikman and Buck? Has that ever happened, or at least been?
Originally they tried to get, I think Shaq could have had more money from ESPN. And I do think they tried to get Barkley originally as well. And then as it's gone on, I'm sure they flirted maybe with them. But the problem is that, and now they've kind of, under Jimmy Pitaro, they've kind of created, it's a star system where they have different rules for, like, you know, you don't see Aikman on all the time. You don't see Joe Buck on all the time. And, you know, ESPN, I mean, I like Connecticut, but it's in Bristol, you know, like guys don't necessarily, they rather go to Atlanta. And they just don't work. They work hard. I mean, you know, especially during the playoffs and the NCAA tournament, there's a lot of days in there, but they're not working like 5, 7, 6 days a week. You worked at ESPN. ESPN, you work. It's not a place. So I think that's been a big thing. Now, they've changed that a little bit. They've figured it out that they can't really compete. If you're offering similar money and you only have to work once a week. But I think that's kind of the issue, is that you end up getting called from a lot of different places. Again, it's changed. Like, you know, you also, even though he's not a full employee, you don't see Peyton Manning on all the time. So they've kind of changed a little bit, but I think that's probably been the issue of, you know, trying to lure those guys over.
So you mentioned earlier, 2 years left on the current deal. I think it ends with it being worth around like $2.4 billion is what I've read.
Yeah.
And so we have this upcoming season and the one after. And I've read everything, and you mentioned NBC and Amazon and obviously ESPN Turner. If you were to predict right now, how does it look, you know, beginning with the 25-26 season? That would be the first year of the new deal. How does the whole, you know, NBA media package look?
Can I do a little plug here? So I do a newsletter. I can get permission.
Oh, yes.
I do a newsletter every Monday called Sports Clicker Newsletter at New York Post Plus every Monday. So I do a thing kind of, you know, how they have the draft mocks that I've been doing. I did my first mock of what's going to happen. And this is what I would say right now. This is subject to change. I would say Turner, TNT goes to Tuesday. Thursday is Amazon, possibly Apple, but Thursday, Amazon. ESPN cuts down on the amount of games they have. In terms of regular season, but still a lot. I mean, just maybe it's just Wednesdays or just Fridays and then the Saturday ABC games. So less regular season games. The in-season tournament, not sure yet. And they go three. I mean, NBC is a player. I think they're going to fight with TNT for Tuesday. Is it possible they could try to do Sunday night basketball after Sunday night football? So the way I look at Thursday night football for Amazon, they'll try to, you know, you won't have Thursday night basketball until the football season ends, so then you're not competing with it. And then you go, Amazon tries to own Thursday nights. There's a relationship there. But Apple is serious. They're serious about the NBA. So, I mean, that's a big fight. And maybe they do something with both of them. And you add in, I mean, next year the in-season tournament will just be on ESPN and TNT, but then it'll be open for bidding. And so, you know, that's a factor too. And then I'd say, the NBA TV playoff games, those other series that weren't on ESPN and TBS, I think those go to one of the streamers, you know, probably. And then maybe they're incentivized, if they do well enough, then they can get better games as the contracts go on.
Is there a world where it's, say, Turner Tuesday, ESPN Wednesday, Amazon Thursday, ABC, as you said, Saturday, and NBC on Sunday night?
I think that's possible. I heard they're more doing three partners than four.
Okay.
But I do think that's possible. Look, I think the one thing they can take to the bank is the finals will be on broadcast TV. And so that's where NBC, I mean, I think ABC probably keeps it, but NBC, could get in there as well, because that's where the real, you know, that's the cream of the crop. It's not a Super Bowl. It's different. I don't know why these sports get so upset about being compared to the NFL. I mean, there's so many arguments to make why they do just as well. Like, I mean, not just as well, but compete very well with the NFL. It's just a different, the NFL is scarcity. And then they have an event that's just unmatched. But comparing, it's just a different, it's just totally different. And I just think these other leagues get way too caught up, like, in the NFL comparison. And the NFL is dominant. They are at the top, but I think the NBA, NHL, and MLB all have compelling arguments for why they're very, very successful.
If I'm honest, you know, I have great affinity for ESPN, being that I worked there, and they gave me an opportunity to be on basketball. Tim Corrigan is the man forever for giving me that opportunity. TNT never worked for Turner, but I love the product, obviously. I am really rooting for NBC in this, just as a kid of the 90s. Mm. NBA on NBC to me is, you know, Bob Costas, Marv Albert. That would be tremendous. Why all of a sudden? I was heartbroken when they got rid of it in the early 2000s. I mean, that music, everything about it. Why are they interested in basketball again? And actually, as you and John have talked about on your podcast, they are looking for a new president, right? A new president of NBC Sports. And you guys mentioned, I think it was John who predicted. I listen, by the way. I listen every week. I enjoy it very much. Rick Cordella,
yes.
Who the name was familiar to me. And then I went through my emails, and when I used to do some freelance work for NBCSports.com, I would talk to Rick all the time. I was like, is this the same Rick Cordella? Wow, president of NBC Sports? Maybe I can be on the NBA on NBC if it comes back. There, so just curious, and he was a great guy back then, and I'm sure he still is. Why are they interested in it again? And in this change, you know, them needing a new president, could that affect their interest?
So, to get you this job, let's just help you out. Mark Lazarus is the chairman of NBC Universal, and he was the head of Turner Sports back in the day, or maybe in a higher position. I can't remember his exact title when they, you know, when they first got it. So he has a great relationship with Adam Silver. So if you talk about anything, that's where it starts. So these deals, like most deals, are first about money and second about relationships. So NBC has a really strong relationship. And I was a little more bullish. I think they're going to be a little more disciplined, in my opinion. And I don't know if discipline will win the day. Like, I don't think you're getting that. I think the NBA, you know, is going to probably, I don't know if they'll double, but they're going to get a big increase, right, overall. And so, I think, you know, why do they want it? Because, you know, first off, on broadcast TV, it's a guarantee, right? We talked about Heat and Nuggets. It was 11 million people watched that. There's not many things that get 11 million people anymore, especially, you know, when you're trying to, the scripted television has largely moved to streamers. Now they all have their own streamers. And so, you know, how do you bring people in and, you know, and then they make a lot of money from retrans fees. And for the NBA, like, look, they're not going to do anything where they're not. I can't imagine the finals won't be on broadcast TV, because you have to reach everybody. That's the, you know, that's what people are finding, you know, in the digital world. It's just, you don't reach, you can't, you know, Amazon, like, that's why, to me, I sort of see Amazon already has a good relationship with the NBA. They've done some deals internationally. I think Amazon has a little bit more of a compelling argument, just because Apple TV Plus doesn't have the penetration that, you know, it's Apple, so they do have good distribution, of course. But Amazon, a lot of people have Amazon Prime, so it's just, like, not a heavy lift. They already have Thursday Night Football. I don't know if you're selling people on Amazon Prime, right? If 10 million people are already watching, on, you know, not always, but on a lot of nights, the NFL on Thursday Night Football. Then if you put the NBA there, it kind of moves seamlessly. Now, I do think it's important for all these leagues. They want Apple involved. They want Amazon involved. So they kind of, Apple didn't do an NFL deal. And so, you know, they these tech players, because we, you know, when we talk about cable diminishing, you know, who's going to be the next, how's that next generation of huge checks? Who's going to write those? And so, you know, the streamers are interested in doing it, but it also has to work. You know, they're not charity. So I think Amazon feels like Thursday Night Football is working. But Apple hasn't really stepped in fully, got an MLS deal. Did a small baseball deal. But the NBA is one they definitely want.
And we're talking about the national deals here. The mm-hmm. other component, of course, are the regional games, right? Like the, you know, the Bucks versus the Magic on a Tuesday night.
Yep.
And we know that the regional sports networks are a total mess. You've reported on this extensively. Diamond, which is one of the big ones, I think has the rights to 16 teams. They're going bankrupt. Feels like a mess of a situation and a model that is just getting more and more archaic. Do you foresee when this deal is up, a model sort of like the Apple MLS one or Red Zone YouTube, where the NBA just pretty much sells League Pass to a streamer and that's how you watch your team game 1 through 82. Is there ever a world where they just get rid of the regional deals and just sell it all to someone where you can watch your team from wherever in the world?
So yes and no. The yes part of it is, yeah, there is going to probably be that ability where you can just stream your team's games and get rid of blackouts. The hard part is a couple things. Number one, the idea of the MLS thing, I don't think, you know, type deal where it's all in. I just think the other, it kind of eliminates any other deals, right? So if you did the NBA and you get all 82 games and you're a Knicks fan and you can just buy them through the NBA, then you wouldn't get ESPN. You don't need ESPN at that point. I mean, maybe they have the playoffs, right? Those other games need to be exclusive to have value for ESPN to buy them. So you're never going to see like you can get every game, right? You could get the majority of games. That probably will happen. But trying to figure out the cable element, because MSG Network, you know, Knick games and Laker games in LA are much more valuable than Toronto Raptor games. Sorry about that. If you did an overall, you know, deal, like that's what's going to be kind of a little bit messy of how you do that. So I think it might not be as clean, at least the next 10 years, of just like you can buy everything. And I don't even think, I've said this, like let's say Apple came and they offered twice as much money as anybody else. Now, twice as much, they might do it. And they said, we want every game. And you just get it through Apple. This is going to be great. We'll sell them around the world. And it might work. I still think if I'm the NBA, I say no to that, because you got to think about the next deal. And if that doesn't work, and it probably works, but that doesn't make you more money, where are the rest of those bidders going to be? So I don't think so. So it's going to be messy, and you know, baseball is going to have an issue. I don't think the NBA will have as big an issue because of salary cap sport and because of how much money you get nationally. But like for baseball, it's always been this way, but the regional sports networks like the YES Network with the Yankees, they're still going to make a lot of money. And then the San Diego Padres, they're going to be going direct to consumer. They're going to be getting a lot less money. And so, yes, at the moment, they're being subsidized by MLB, but how long are they going to be able to do that and for how many teams? So that's where it is a very big story, like kind of we were talking about at the beginning of this, of why I wanted to cover it and where the webs of media go into. This is one that's going to affect and impact sports over the next decade or more in terms of how players are paid and in a lot of areas.
And by the way, I get the Raptors example. Although I will say they have a whole country that watches their games as opposed to say like the Bucks who just have Milwaukee.
True. I pulled that out of there and I
you did know, do TSN that. TSN Sports, and I think their ratings are pretty good, but I get what
I
you're
did
trying
do that
to
on purpose though. But to that point though, TSN is not going to be like, okay, go put them on Apple or Amazon.
Sure. No, yeah,
so that's where the issue comes in.
Could I get your opinion on the in-season tournament? I know you're a big soccer fan. Yeah. I have become a gigantic soccer fan this season because of my kids who are 11 and 9. My boys adore soccer. And yesterday I'm watching CONCACAF Nations League on Paramount Plus, and we're watching every second. I can't get them to watch any other sport. And so I understand what they are trying to do here. And I know Adam Silver is a big soccer fan, but I want to kind of call BS on this tournament, because the magic of the FA Cup or the Carabao Cup in England is that Man City is playing Blackpool. Mm-hmm. Everyone is involved. So for this tournament to really be successful, it has to include teams outside of the NBA, get the EuroLeague teams involved, get the G League teams involved. If it's just the same old teams playing each other, I know you're putting them in different groups, and it might be, you know, Washington and OKC in a group. Great, that's fine. But it's still the same old teams. How is this going to feel important? But now if you give the opportunity to Real Madrid to beat the Lakers in a global tournament, like you're trying to really create like soccer, now you have something special. Now you have the little engine trying to take down the big dog. Do you agree or disagree with me here? Because I don't understand the appeal of this. You're trying to make the early games special. To me, it feels very manufactured and inauthentic.
So I agree and I disagree. So this seems like to be the theme of the podcast. but on this one, I agree and disagree. So I think in theory, what you're saying, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think in practicality, these teams can't really compete, you know, with the NBA players and the way the sport is. It's different than soccer in that, you know, most times, you know, Man United beats these smaller teams, but you can, there's things you can do in terms of like how you play the game. It's lower scoring. It's just like, I think for lack of a better term, I don't know if this is right, it's more of meritocracy in terms of like what's going to happen. Like there's just more, the teams are better. So the idea of doing that, yes, I agree. And I do kind of want to see how they come with this tournament and what it entails exactly. But I do think your point is, well, we're getting the same teams playing each other, which how is that different if they're wearing different uniforms and it's neutral court? Like, who really cares about that? That's kind of gimmicky. And I think the other issue to me, and this is a problem, is that let's just say they create something that's pretty good, right? Where the stars do want to compete, because I do think it will be for a lot of money. So that will be something that is something that gets players out there, especially like I think one thing that like the average fan who doesn't follow soccer might not realize is like the FA Cup, when you have a game of like a top team like Manchester City playing a lesser team, then they, a lot of times in those games, they don't play their stars, right? Mm-hmm. Unless they're like losing late and then they put them in and try to get W, but they don't really. So, you know, you could see that, you know, in these, you know, the first group stages, but then when they get to the most important games, they do play their stars. But if you make these games important and they do count for the regular season, which I think is something that Adam Silver has said, that they'll count for the regular season as well, then when you just have a normal regular season game, is that even now, does that even feel even less important, even more like an exhibition, which I think is really the issue as well, is that, you know, as a fan, you just like these games don't feel important. It's like making the playoffs, especially this season, we saw it just, you just had to get in the tournament and then, you know, you could win or get to the finals. I do think it kind of created another issue of like, yeah, well, this is pretty good. But now these regular season games feel like even more like exhibitions.
Yes.
So I will say this, though. And I think you talk about like the WBC in baseball, like nobody, if we made the World Cup tomorrow in soccer, the biggest tournament in the world for any sport, people would probably be like, oh, it's, you know, I don't like that. It's like, you know, and the teams of the club teams would probably not want their players to play. And, you know, soccer, everyone plays. It's like an honor to play. And there's just like an understanding that you let your player play. I don't know if they're, what their insurance is. I don't even know how that works, but they do play. It takes time to build these things. So, I mean, I put the idea that they should call it either the Michael Jordan trophy, MJ, or the Kobe Bryant trophy, the Kobe. Because I think over years, I think guys would, I could see it being a thing. I want to play for the Kobe. I want to win a Kobe. Mm. I want to win an MJ. And again, I'm there. I know it's just a name, but like kind of that as like, you know, I think when you go into these things, you kind of want to have a theme of it. And that can bring, give it importance. And now, but your point overall, like not knowing, you know, and they have pretty smart people at the NBA, so I'm sure they're coming up with some things. I agree with you, though. Like if it's just like Knicks Celtics and they have different uniforms and they're playing in Hartford or something, I don't know why I really care that much.
Right.
You know, maybe a championship, but the overall tournament, I'm not sure I care that much.
I'm curious as to why, and by the way, thank you so much for this, and I'll only keep you for a few more minutes. I love this stuff, so I appreciate the insight. Why is it in the NFL, like, you know, Brady's about to retire, like all the talk is who's going to sign him? Like which TV network's going to sign him? Peyton, same thing. Even the top coaches, it's kind of the same thing. Like you were talking about Sean McVay. But we don't talk about that in the NBA. Like it's not like, oh, LeBron has 2 years left. Who's going to grab him? Why is it like that in the NFL but not so much in the NBA?
Two reasons. There's only two companies involved, and they both, you know, and there's only one finals. Only one group has the finals. So I think when you look at the NFL, now you're adding ABC into the mix, but previously it was Fox, CBS, and NBC had Super Bowls. And the Super Bowl is that show, 100 million people, and you really want to have something that is special. And so I think that's where the importance, and now, which just exploded, because I mean, those guys are making good money, you know, $5-6 million, you know, in the past, but, you know, now 18 million for Romo, you know, and Aikman, and 37 and a half for Brady. That just become crazy. I do think if LeBron wants to do it, he'll be able to do it at a lot of money. I think Amazon had him do an NFL show this year, which you're like, why would LeBron do an NFL show? And I'm sure they paid him a good amount just for one night, and it was with his show, The Shop. But like, if they get the NBA, you know, could they get LeBron? You know, like, LeBron's a difference maker. The other thing is, and this is an issue with the NFL as well, is these guys make so much money. And they don't really have to do it, right? Like, I think Draymond's already signed a deal with Turner. So I could see him kind of in that, you know, next, if they keep it, that next generation of inside the NBA, although those guys are still relatively young. And so I think that's the biggest reason. But the biggest one, and I think you will see some movement, this next one, like, it'll be a fun, like, kind of, at least for me, like, kind of free agency, because if you bring in an Amazon or an Apple, I think, hopefully Apple's learned, but Amazon definitely liked what happened because they got it right. They went big time for Al Michaels, Herb Street. They made some big swings for Brady, for Sean McVay, for Peyton Manning. And then so you add that's what kind of loosens it up. And it's just like even though I think this is, they're still important. The studio shows on Sunday, although, you know, I could make a pretty good argument they shouldn't be, because there's analysis all week. And those weren't, you know, again, back in the day, you didn't have NFL Live on every day. You didn't have a million podcasts. So Sunday morning, you know, NFL Countdown was, you know, that was the place you found out what was going on. And you still do in a sense, but there's just so many other ways to find out information and hear things. Those programs still have marquee. And I do find it amazing that, you know, how much, you know, commercials those guys get. You still see Terry Bradshaw in commercials. I mean, he last won a Super Bowl in 1979, and he's still, you know, so because he's still relevant because of the Fox show. So I think in 2 years, like, if LeBron, I think he might still be playing, but if he is not, and he wants to do it, the other thing is, these guys, you know, I think LeBron is a billionaire supposedly. So, I mean, if he's not, he's probably close. I mean, does he really want to? He's not going to want to go, like, hey, every Tuesday, you got to be in Atlanta if he lives in LA. Like, he doesn't, I know he'll fly private, all that stuff, but does he really want to do that? Does he need to do that?
By the way, the two players we didn't touch on, Fox and Viacom CBS, do they have any interest or no?
Fox doesn't. Lachlan Murdoch basically said they're not going to be involved. And then CBS, I could see maybe because they have a partnership with Turner to give him a broadcast wing, so maybe try to get the finals. I mean, I wouldn't put that on the out of the question scenario, but I don't think that's happening. They're pretty happy with what their portfolio is, and so just adding, you know, it's a lot of money. So I don't think that they necessarily. I would say it's unlikely. I wouldn't say impossible, but unlikely. They're very involved.
I adore Mike Breen as a Knicks fan, but also as someone who got to work with him twice, and it was surreal to just be in the room with him and then to find out just the kind of mensch that he is. Like, this guy, I don't know if you've had dealings with him, but he is just salt of the earth, like, guy who would call me up and say, like, you need anything? Let's go for lunch. This is Mike Breen.
Yep.
Going out of his way to make the newcomer feel special. So when I ask this question, I'm not trying to push him out, but I did just recently hear him, great interview with Dan Le Batard on his show, and he said he doesn't want to do this forever. He doesn't want to be that old guy, you know, in his 80s doing this. So I'm just wondering, maybe 5-6 years from now, because I know he just called his 18th finals, 100 final games, incredible run. Who do you think is the A team for the finals? And, you know, 10 or so years. Who comes to mind?
10 like years. I mean, that's the hard one.
What about 5-6? Is there, like, who's the next guy?
I would say the best. I mean, we talked about him earlier. I say Ian Eagle's the best play-by-player.
Even if ESPN has this on lockdown, you think he goes over there?
Well, I mean, again, you don't, I mean, that's a, you know, you have to, the contracts and all that, that's complicated. But he's the best going. You know, in-house, they have Ryan Rucco, who they like a lot. I think he'd be considered. You know, Dave Pasch is there as well. You know, Harlan, again, we're saying 5-6 years from now, he's 62, 63. So I don't, You know, I don't think he's moving. Yeah, and you're kind of, I mean, you're going on the premise that it's only ABC, ESPN.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. These jobs are so coveted, but they don't come, you know, you kind of have to have really good timing. Like Breen is, as you said, he's excellent. But he ended up having really good timing just because, I mean, I have to remember exactly how it all went down 20 years ago, but it just worked out very well for him. He didn't originally get it. You know, first it was Brad Nessler, then David Stern got rid of Nessler, wanted Al Michaels. Michaels didn't really want to do it. They ended up paying him $250,000 per game. He ended up doing it.
Stern got rid of Nessler. I never knew that.
Yeah, Stern got rid of Nessler.
Wow.
You like this one. And then Stern got rid of UB Brown.
He did?
I was on the phone with Norby Williamson. This is back in the day. And it was on the record. And I'm like, he was in charge of the NBA. And I was like, UB's gone. And Norby was in charge of the NBA. He's like, no, he's not. I'm in charge of the NBA. And I'm like, I'm telling you, he's gone. Because Stern had it in. I think it might have been Breen and UB at that point. And
wow.
He just didn't want. I mean, UB's so amazing. He's still doing this.
Yes.
But, and UB, I could see Stern's point with UB. You know, he's very technical for a lead crew. We were talking about that before. He's very technical. He's great, but he's very technical. And so, like, when you have that broader audience, and, you know, David Stern was, and you probably know this. I mean, David Stern was evolved. Like, you know, like when Marv came back, that's David Stern.
Yeah.
That wasn't like, I think Turner was like told, you're hiring Marv, which was great. And, you know, like that's how it works. And so, yeah, so that happened. And then he was gone. So, I mean, he was not gone, but he was off of the finals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow, what a story. Okay, two last ones, if I may. I've heard you talk about Doc Rivers potentially coming back. I remember him when he was on TNT. I actually thought he was quite good. Yep. Are there any names that might pop up in the next year or two? There have been some new, you know, I think J.J. Redick is tremendous. Yep. I'm a big fan of his. And there was rumors that he was going to become a coach, which I was kind of bummed about because I want to see how far he can take this. He obviously didn't get the Raptors job, but are there any names that we should look out for next season as far as some fresh new blood?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of ex-players, they're a little bit different. Like, I guess the NFL just feels like, because it's usually quarterback-centric or maybe like, you know, sometimes there's some big D-line men or something like that where they retire and it's like, okay, well, does that person want to do TV? NBA, you know, like you kind of said, the stars are retiring, right? That's where you sort of, like, I don't think he's going anywhere, but like, would a Chris Paul want to do it? Like, I don't think he sounds like he's playing whatever's happening in Phoenix. I don't know. It seemed like weird reporting, you know, back and forth there on whatever's going on there.
Yes.
But like, whatever's going on, it seemed clear from an outsider's point of view that Paul is wanting to play. But like, you know, he's an interesting guy. Definitely, you know, he has a relationship with Iger, you know, and ESPN. So, you know, that's somebody I'm just going to top my head, but I think Doc is the one. You know, he's really tight with Breen, Mark Stein, who has a newsletter, you know, Substack reported that, the Mavericks are interested in Van Gundy to be Jason Kidd's lead assistant. And if you're Van Gundy, yeah, you've been doing this for 20 years. He's actually approaching 100 NBA Finals games.
Wow.
You know, if you want to get back into coaching, he hasn't gotten a head coaching job. And I know he doesn't need the money, but, you know, those jobs are now paying $2 million a year. You know, Phoenix, I think that's what the assistant got. So, you know, could he go back? And if he does, obviously Doris Burke is there. You have Redick there. You have Richard Jefferson there. So they'd all have to be considered. But Breen's tight. I think they're like best friends, him and Doc Rivers. So I think Doc maybe could have a chance at that job.
Okay.
If that were to happen. That's a lot of ifs.
You know, yeah, I'm not reporting
that. A lot of ifs.
No.
Aggregators.
No,
a lot of ifs there. Okay.
I get it.
I mean, I'm dealing every week with The Rock and Tom Brady. It's like
Look at you getting the heat from The Rock. That must have been fun, right? Did you print that out and put it on your bulletin board?
Yeah, I didn't write back. We're going to talk about it on the pod. Well, what happened was, number one is, again, I don't like to get other people's report. And there's a report that the ESPN was paying the XFL, which The Rock owns, $20 million rights fee. They're paying them. No, there's no rights fee. That's 100% accurate. There's no rights fee. So that there was reports. That's wrong. So I said that John was actually the one talking about it. And then I just put that aside in there at the end. And then someone who covers the XFL, he tweeted it out. But he said that I said there was no... what did he say? Not rights fee. He said rights deal. Okay. Big difference. Okay, it was rights deal.
Yeah.
So then The Rock said, not true. And he said his whole thing. And I was working. I was actually doing something on someone, a story that, you know, so I was like kind of not, you know, a lot of days I'm at my computer all day on my phone. So I wasn't really on. So I got like a text. And so, and then I went back and forth. And then I do this thing where there's a couple of people, but Oran's one of them, where I call somebody up and I want them to tell me to not do something.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, don't, because yeah. I always would tell anybody this. It is like engaging with Twitter, especially like The Rock. Like, I'm not probably going to win. Even if I'm correct, probably not going to win that battle. So I just kind of stood down. I did. The guy who, what was his name? James Layton, maybe. He had emailed me like, did I get this right? And I originally didn't really read it because I was like doing other things. Then the next day when then Awful Announcing wrote about it, I looked back, or someone actually said to me who I was talking with about it, he said, yeah, he wrote that. So he kind of got it wrong. And he was nice. He actually tweeted out after I said, hey man, I just noticed like you wrote deal, not fee. And then he kind of tweeted out after, but you know, at that point, as you know, we all know the internet's already done with it. So it's like, I don't know. What are you going to do? Like, I had the same thing with Tom Brady. One was more ridiculous than, no, they're both kind of ridiculous, but whatever. It is what it is. It's an honor that people would, you know, take what you say and
yeah,
like think something of it. So, you know, you want them to get right, but I know a lot of people go on these podcasts and complain. I'm not complaining.
No, of course not. Last one. If you could, I'm putting you on the spot here, but, someone who cares deeply about this stuff and watches it and has studied it to a degree, your ultimate three-man team from any generation to call a basketball game. And if we could throw in like a host, you know, like sort of like the role that Costas had.
Okay.
You don't even have to give me the rest of the desk, so to speak, but like, who do you want opening the broadcast? And then who do you want, you know, it to be thrown to? And we'll go with a three-man team, even though I kind of like the two-man team, to be honest, but like, just cause that's what's the standard these days. Who are you going with?
I'm gonna go Marv as my play-by-play guy. Analyst. I'll go Van Gundy. Mm. I mean, again, you're giving me, I told you like the earth would spin. I take this stuff seriously. So I want to like, think about it a little bit
more. Those are two great. I would go with them too. They were,
Marvin Van Gundy. And then I go third person. I mean, I want Barkley in studio. Third person. I mean, Raftery is tremendous. So
you're going college. What about Bill Walton? He was great back.
You can go college. Yeah, I like Walton, but he overwhelms the broadcast too much.
No, but he was great on the NBA in the 90s. No, you didn't like him?
No, he was.
Snapper Jones?
No, yeah, no, that was a good team. But a little, like,
too
my
much.
Thing is, like, yeah. I like Vital a lot, but, like, I like Vital more on, like, NC State Wake Forest than I do on Duke North Carolina back in the day, because, like, that's already a big game.
Yeah.
I don't need him to tell me it's a big game. When he, like a little bit of a lesser game, he'll get that. He still has that enthusiasm that kind of makes him feel even bigger. I think Walton, same thing. I think on the bigger game, I want to watch the game. I don't, like, it's a little bit too much of the Bill Walton show. If you want to watch the game.
No, I get it. Fratello?
Yeah, he might be in there. Fratello was excellent.
You got two coaches. Maybe Doris. Do you go Doris or?
I don't think I go. I think she's good, but I wouldn't probably go all the time. I don't think I go Doris.
Yeah. Going Ernie or Bob as the host?
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll probably go Ernie.
Wow.
I think I'd go Ernie.
Wow.
Bob more that's baseball for me.
Really? Maybe on NBC in the 90s.
No, I mean, look, that's like, guys, this is like the, you know, like
people, I know,
like,
it's a great, you know, this is barbershop talk.
Like LeBron versus Jordan. And I look, you can debate it all you want. There's just no answer. And also, I always say this because I've had a Hall of Fame vote. If I don't vote for somebody for the Hall of Fame, it's not an insult. Like, it's not an insult. It's the ultimate, especially if it's close, it's the ultimate. So yeah, like, look, I could have gone, I could go Costas too. I just think Ernie's more associated with the NBA. So that's why I give him more I could probably give him the tip of the cap.
Well, the truth is you just go with the whole inside the NBA team. Like, that's the all-time team, right? You could just go with them.
I think you can go wrong. Like, and also I will say also about Ernie though, like the other thing is, as good as he is, if you put him on one of these ESPN shows, we'd probably be like, hey, he's kind of, you know, maybe he's boring. Maybe he doesn't. Yeah. But I do think the most underrated thing that just, like, people focus on, like, analysts. And if you're, like, a player out there, just get with the right play-by-play or studio host. That makes such a difference, you know, in terms of how well you do. Like, hopefully this has been good. You ask good questions. Like, you're, like, kind of, you know, that makes, you know, it makes the podcast successful. But it's also, like, it makes it easy. Right. Cause you're going the right places. You know, sometimes especially like when you do radio. I used to joke. I used to do radio after like Yankee games, and like A-Rod hit his 500th home run, and you go on the show, and someone would be like, "So Von Nova, six innings, two." Yeah. It's like, yeah, that was a big story. A lot of people talking about that. And then, you know, A-Rod hit his 500th homer. That was also a big story. You know what I mean? Like that would happen. And it's sort of like, all right, are you like, I got it. You want to talk about the pitcher first. But yeah, anyways, but that's really important. So yeah, you go either Costas or Ernie Johnson.
Well, this has been a blast. I really appreciate it. Keep up the great work. Andrew Marchand, which I do believe is a French name, by the way, right? Marchand, yep. Right? Are you French?
I am.
Okay.
French cousins. Wow. They're my French... One of my French cousins is actually in New York. They're coming back in. I get tickets. I got
Why don't you go by Andrew Marchand?
Some people say nobody can really say it correctly. I could do that. I go Marchand. You know, Brad Marchand was Brad Marchand, but then he changed to Brad Marchand. And I've never spoken to him, but I do believe that because of me.
Related? Are you guys related?
Not related. And I've never licked anybody.
Check out the Marchand and Oran podcast. It wouldn't rhyme as well if you were Marchand Oran podcast.
Well, it could be. If he had like red hair, you remember Rusty Staub, the Grand Orange? Of course, I know Rusty Staub. It could be the Marchand and Oran.
Oh, yeah. That's not bad.
We do a French version.
Regardless, it's a great listen, and your work is great. Must read stuff. I really appreciate this. Thanks so much, Andrew.
Thanks, man.
All right. How great was that? Love talking about that stuff. In particular, the end of the conversation about the great broadcasters. There's no wrong answer. All legends. And as I've talked about before, these are the men that got me into broadcasting, that made me fall in love with the magic of TV and be on NBC, Marv Albert, Bob Costas, Mike Breen, Ian Eagle. I mean, to me, these individuals are larger than life, brilliant minds. And so I really enjoyed all of that. And I can't wait to see how it all plays out. And it would be pretty damn cool if NBC got in the mix just so we can hear that music again. Da 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 da. I enjoyed it. I hope you did as well. Thank you very much to Andrew Marchand. Check out his stuff over at the New York Post, and also check out his Marchand and Oran podcast. It's a great listen, especially if you are interested in this side of the sports world. I appreciate all your support very, very much. Thank you for continuing to follow, downloading, rating, reviewing, commenting, all that stuff and more. It goes a very long way. And I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. We've got some great previous episodes. All of them are pretty much evergreen, meaning you can listen to them at any time, not really tied to current events. So go check them out. Go enjoy them. And I'll talk to you very soon. All right. Thanks to Andrew Marchand. Thanks to the production team. Thanks to all of you. Enjoy your weekend, my friends. We'll talk soon. Take care.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.